All right, ladies and gentlemen, Joe Campolo. That's right. He does a wonderful blog. It's called Off the Record, and of course, noticed it many a year ago. And I thought, you know what? Let's get it on the air. He had so many great things to write about. Everything, covered everything. I said, let's put it on the air. We'll call it On the Record. It's a little Off the Record, On the Record. That's the name. And it's always great to have him. My good friend, Mr. Joe Campolo, managing partner of the great firm. A Forbes top corporate law firm, by the way, in this country. Campolo Middleton and McCormick, the managing partner, Joseph Nicholas Campolo. Sir, how are you?
Hey, Jay. How you doing, man?
Everything good? You doing okay?
Yeah.
Fall season?
Everything is good. Burning it up. Very, very busy. All good, though.
Baseball season winding down. Football. You know, baseball season winded down a long time. You know, that's a whole nother story, but that's all right. I mean, listen, it was fun. You know, it was fun. The Mets and everything else. Yankees are barely in it. They got to keep winning. I don't know if they're going to make it. But, you know, football, something about the fall season, the holidays. You know, we're still in a pandemic. I mean, man, we got a lot on our plate, don't we?
Yeah, a lot going on. I mean, you know, it's tough to be a New York sports fan right now, for sure. But I enjoy still watching it. I love playing golf this time of year. You know, this is the perfect time of year to be playing golf. So I'm enjoying that as the New York golf season winds down. I'm looking forward to the Ryder Cup coming up this weekend. I think it's going to be a super exciting time. So lots to enjoy and have some recreation for sure.
That Ryder Cup, you're right. Bryson in it, right? Also, Mr. Koepka. They're battling, right? Are they in it? They don't like each other, right?
Yeah, they're both in it, and I would think it's safe to say that they definitely do not like each other. But let's see if they can pull it together, and really get through this Ryder Cup. I mean, it's a tough match. I mean, usually it's a little advantage U.S. to a certain extent, but I'll tell you, the European team is incredibly strong. I'm super excited to watch it and see what happens. I think there's going to be a lot of theatrics. You know, people don't understand how exciting golf can be. And this is one of those examples where if you ever want to see some really exciting sports moments, watch this Ryder Cup. I think it's going to be extraordinary.
Yeah, culmination of a pretty good season, exciting tournaments all throughout, no question. I'll be watching it. Let's get into a couple of things, Joe. We got a full plate today, so let's get into the Biden address to the United Nations. You know, he spoke about, what you would think Joe Biden would, climate change, human rights violations. You know what? I needed to hear a little bit more. No real discussions regarding China, Russia. Nothing crazy, you know, brought up Afghanistan, but, you know, really he didn't get into it. You wouldn't think he would as far as the botched withdrawal that occurred and everything else. You know, it was a fascinating dynamic yesterday. World leaders, about 100 of them present, a lot of them there. You know, you wonder the inner mindset of many as they focus in on this president. And, you know, certainly you could kind of scratch your head. A lot of the moves he's made, if you are an ally of some sort here, you know, you wonder about the likes of Emmanuel Macron out of France and, of course, Boris Johnson, who's in Washington, and, you know, even Angela Merkel. And listen, there is a lot of questions here. The Australia situation with the submarines and everything else, you know, kind of a little bit of a dart at China. You know, it's just a lot happening when Biden took the floor yesterday, Joe.
Yeah, look, I think it's always important, Jay, to take sort of a step back and see what is the whole purpose of the United Nations and why the U.S. president addressing the United Nations is watched, you know, so closely. So you look at what does the United States of America represent? Well, we were colonies that overthrew the British monarchy, who were tyrants. There was tyranny going on in the world. They were colonizing, taxing, and starving out all sorts of properties. And we here in the U.S. stood up to them and said, "No more. There's not going to be any worldwide tyranny going on. We're going to grow this nation and help any nation fight tyranny." And that's super important, right? And the chess match that's existed for every president of the United States since then is, you know, how do we continue to help countries that need our help and want our help and fight tyranny? And, you know, I think it's a little crazy to not address in a UN session by the United States president to not address clearly the two most tyrannical countries in the world right now, which is Russia and China. Now, it might be all part of a master diplomatic negotiating plan. It certainly might be. I'm not sure. We'll have to see how it how it plays out. But the greatest threat right now to world peace is, you know, bookended between China and Russia. And, you know, if you're watching it closely, China is just building up its GDP, and they're continuing to grow. They're now looking to increase their workforce, so they've increased their, you know, per family child limit. I'm an armchair quarterback when I read the news and watch what's going on in China, but it seems pretty clear to me that it's exactly what they're doing. For any Lord of the Rings fans out there, it's like Saruman building his army of orcs secretly just by increasing the amount of people he's going to have to serve in the army. And it seems to me, at least to me, that that's exactly what's going on in China. And so to not address, it in any way, shape, or form, to not even mention China in his remarks, I think is incredibly irresponsible, because we want them to know we're watching, or at least I hope we're watching. It's the same with Russia. You know, here we have, you know, sort of unrest in the Middle East with Afghanistan and us withdrawing from Afghanistan, and we know what Russia's MO is. Russia's MO is to look for these countries that are destabilized and sort of backdoor in and offer them, resources in order for loyalty and fidelity to Russia. And so, you know, I think it's sort of, I understand the discussion of wanting to talk about, climate change and global warming. I think all of that's super important to be addressed on a global perspective. But I'll tell you, I think especially with the recent withdrawal from Afghanistan, the world's a little nervous. The world's a little nervous about what's going on, and we need to see some strength and some comfort. You know, it's a very interesting identity crisis that we're going through in the United States right now, in terms of, do we want to be a globalist nation that's going to grow as much as we can our influence across the world, or are we going to shrink back into isolationism, which is what we saw between World War One and World War Two? We just sort of shrunk and said, hey, we're going to worry about the U.S. right now. So we're definitely going through an identity crisis, and I get it. You know, I think President Trump was very clear that he was in sort of isolation mode. And now with the Biden administration, I think he's trying to feel it out, but now's not the time to have questions. We have to have a clear global strategy, especially when we're addressing the world at the UN, as to what are our priorities in, you know, making sure that tyrannical nations are not going to gain power or dominance in the world has to be a priority.
Joe, to me, and I recorded it, I watched it before I turned in last night. I didn't get a lot out of this thing. I think he lost the room also. You know, he spoke for about 40 minutes. He didn't give you anything. I'm saying, you know, he gave you the regular jargon. You know, build back better. You know, his domestic slogan. You know, we gotta kind of work together. We stand at an inflection point in history. This is a decisive decade. You know, he gave you nonsense. He didn't give you anything of content here. Nothing. I can only imagine what global leaders were doing when they weren't nodding out, listening to this garbage. And it was pure garbage. Again, no mention China, Russia. Talked very little about Afghanistan. Of course, he's not going to bring up the disastrous withdrawal that led to 13 of our service members killed. He talks about, you know, one of the standouts for me was, you know, rebuilding alliances. Think about that. Even as our allies across this, they're furious at this guy as far as what happened in Afghanistan. And not to mention, you want to put a little icing on the cake, France. When has France ever mad at us, right? You know, they just withdrew its U.S. ambassador in protest after what Biden did, you know, the announcement of a security deal with Australia and the $66 billion plan down the toilet for the French to sell Canberra 12 submarines or so. You know, I'm sorry. I didn't get anything out of this. He looked weak. Biden always looks weak. And I got to tell you, every time I see Joe Biden now, I cringe. I really do. There's no leadership. There's no strength. We're the most powerful nation on the planet, at least we once were. Not anymore. We're looked upon differently. This guy has only been in office 9 months. I look at Del Rio right now and what's happening in Texas with the Haitian population there. I look at the economy, inflation. Joe, when does it end? I mean, when does it end? We've got nothing in this administration. This guy is on his way to being one of the worst presidents in the history of this nation if he keeps this up. He has done nothing right. He talked about unity, unifying. He has done nothing but divide. The vaccine right now is ho-hum. We've lost 675,000 Americans, okay? That equates to the Spanish flu from 100 and some odd years ago, 103 years ago, give or take. I mean, he's done nothing. And I look at the price of trying to make a living here, you know, and I wrote down a couple of numbers. Gas is up a dollar. Hotels is up 19.5%. You want a steak? Good luck. 11.5% increase there. Eggs are up 10%. How about a carton of milk for 3% on the rise from a year ago? I mean, how much more can we go? We're spending endlessly. And I'm trying to kind of make it a revolving point here from his speech yesterday at the General Assembly. He gave you nothing. He gave us nothing at all but the usual corporate lines. And damn it, I'm tired of it. I'm sick of what I'm seeing down in Texas. I'm sick of everything what's been going on here with his administration and his vice president, the czar of the crisis, as far as what's happening in Del Rio. Joe, I've had enough.
Yeah, you sound exhausted by it, Jay. And I totally understand that. You know, I always like to give people the benefit of the doubt and try and figure out what their strategy is and watch it unfold over the course of their administration. And, you know, I look at Joe Biden and, you know, growing up, it's such a shame for young people today that we're so divided and so divisive and so visceral about our elected officials, because I can remember growing up and U.S. senators were presented as heroes. You know, they were just presented as heroes, people that were out there really doing big work and having the great debates. And Joe Biden was certainly one of them, you know, a really tough, blue-collar, hard-working guy who was a no-nonsense guy, said what was on his mind and wasn't afraid to take a tough stance. And so, you know, when I saw that he had been elected, I was like, what a great opportunity for him to really stand up and mend a lot of fences across the board. Look, it was a tough 4 years. There's plenty of blame to go around on everybody's side, but the U.S. went through a tough 4 years and there were some fences that needed to be mended for sure, particularly as it relates to allies, right? And I supported that he wanted to really shore up relationships with allies that may have been shooken up, but I don't see that happening yet, right? I don't see that happening yet. You know, where we are our strongest, and it's peace through strength in this world, irrespective of what people would have you believe. You know, human civilization and history is clear that you get peace through strength. And how we're going to get, back to making sure that the global balance of power is in the right hand, is to make sure that our allies are completely shored up and united with us seamlessly. But like you mentioned, all of a sudden, you know, there's rifts with France, and there's cracks here and cracks there, and the bad actors look for those cracks. And so, to me, again, it was, you know, a perfect opportunity for Joe Biden, the old Joe Biden, to get up there and address the United Nations in a no-nonsense way, basically saying, you know, we're going to work hard with those who want to work hard with us, you know, to make sure that we're putting this world back together again in the right way. But if you don't, and you want to oppose us, and you're going to stand in our way, and you're going to fund our enemies, and you think you're going to have a crack to crawl through because of Afghanistan, make no mistake about it. It's not going to happen. It's not going to happen, and I'm here, and I'm united with my allies, and we're going to make sure that it's not going to happen. But it was very, very, like you said, almost plain vanilla speak, so that he wouldn't say anything wrong. But I don't think that was the message that should go out to the world. I mean, I get it, Jay. I get how badly people want to believe that the world is all good. And I believe that there is more good in this world than bad in this world. But there is really a lot of bad people in this world who have a lot of, have a lot of power and have a lot of weapons behind them and who really want to hurt people. They view us as a threat. And we just have to be careful. We just have to be careful. And so, you know, I thought the messaging should have been a little bit geared towards making sure our enemies realize that we are super aligned with our allies and there's going to be zero tolerance for any nonsense moving forward as we rebuild past COVID.
I think I agree with what you said when you mentioned old Joe Biden, the old Joe Biden. Joe Biden is just too damn old. I mean, he just doesn't have the moxie or the intestinal fortitude. Whatever you want to use, moral five, he doesn't have what it takes to get this job done. He just doesn't. I'm sorry. Listen, 50-year politician, he never really did anything. Did he do anything as a VP under Obama? I mean, did he do anything stand out? You know, I mean, outside of longevity, what is he known for? You know, I'm sorry. I wanted to give this guy every opportunity. Every opportunity to succeed as my president. And I'm not liking what I'm seeing, man. I don't have a lot of confidence. I really don't. I'm sorry. I really don't. Nor do I have a confidence in anybody of that administration. You know, you telling me Kamala, the way she's gone about her business, where in the world is she? I don't even know. She's supposed to be the czar of the border. How is she handling that crisis? Do you have confidence in your Secretary of State after what he has accomplished with Afghanistan? Deer in the headlights too, as I call him, Tony Blinken. Do you have any confidence in the Secretary of Defense and Lloyd Austin? I don't. I really don't. The whole administration. And I'll tell you, 2022 can't come quick enough. Throw them the hell all out, okay? Make changes. That's how you fix this. We make changes. And to me, it's in the book as far as change. That's the silver lining here. I would be shocked if we don't have a changing of the guard as far as party is concerned, 2022 in the midterms. Shocked. Shocked if we don't make changes. I'll tell you. But change is needed, man. I mean, change is needed. I'm throwing in the towel right now, 9 months. 9 months. I've had enough. I've seen enough. This guy can't. The only thing this guy makes a decision on is what color socks he wears in the morning. And I guarantee you, Dr. Jill probably picks those out. I'm sorry. I've seen enough, Joe. Dunzo. I don't like what I've seen.
You know what most disturbing piece that I've seen recently, though, is Milley's phone call to China. You know, I don't think that people understand how significant that, you know, that really is. And I'm sure you covered it extensively, but the challenge I have right now going on in this country is you have Blinken as Secretary of State, who's probably the weakest Secretary of State we've had in the last, you know, hundreds of years. He really just doesn't understand, I don't think, he doesn't understand how to negotiate. At all. And then when you get into the Secretary of Defense and the Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, you know, I understand wanting to have stability, and I totally understand, you know, that you have to build alliances and you have to build relationships across the globe with the other superpowers and the heads of their military to make sure that there is world peace and to make sure that there is world stability. But I got to tell you, Jay, if it's true, that General Milley's statement to his Chinese counterpart was, don't worry, if the U.S. is planning to attack China, I'll let you know. If that is true, that's a really, really difficult pill to swallow, and it should be for every American citizen. It should be for every American citizen, because how dare that occur? You know, like it or not, the President of the United States is the Commander-in-Chief, and I don't know that it's treasonous. In other words, it's treason, but it really undermines democracy. So they talk about those January 6th protests undermining democracy as an insurrection. But our top general in this country, if that's true and that's the way the conversation went down with China, that's a much bigger problem to me than what happened in the Capitol on January 6th.
No question. Question about it. And Milley, you know, that's why you got to have a committee in place as far as having Milley answer some questions. He's got a lot of questions to answer here. You know, this whole thing, you know what bothers me also, this, you know, it was a righteous strike, right? Didn't he say something of that nature regarding that drone strike that failed, that killed 10 civilians, a whole bunch of kids? Another well-planned attack. You know, there's just a lot going on here to absorb on a daily basis, a lot. I just can't take any of them. I don't want to see John Kirby anymore over there at the Pentagon. I'm tired of it. I really am. Jake Sullivan, I'm tired of it. None of them come to the table with anything. None of them. This is the worst administration that I have seen ever. Okay? And I am a political junkie when it comes to presidents and administrations. Okay? I'm telling you, this is terrible. This is bad. I don't know how you're going to fix this. The only way, folks, start going to the polls and thinking about 2022. That's it. Make changes. This administration can't figure it out. All right, let's move on. Let's switch gears a little bit. It's captured the nation. It's captured me. The gut-wrenching story of one of our very own here, Gabby Petito from Blue Point, Joe, it captured the hearts of the nation. You know, it led every newscast. It led off with, you know, newscasts in Nebraska, you know. I mean, this one is gut-wrenching. I'm sorry. This is we haven't seen this type of stuff. I hate to correlate stuff like this, but the reason, you know, people have asked why has it captured the nation. I think it's got a little bit of an OJ feel to it, to be honest with you. You know, it's got a little mystery. It's just gut-wrenching of a woman who was murdered. We found that officially yesterday. Pending more autopsy results, we'll find out how she died. You know, the boyfriend on the run, you know, so many twists and turns. You're a top-flight attorney. You know, you've kind of seen miscues, mishaps, and everything along the way and a lot of sides here. Man, I'll tell you, I've been in on this since day one. I've read about it. I've spoken to people about it. And this is just unbelievable as far as where we are at in this case of this poor girl. This is unreal, Joe.
You know, it is. And I share the sentiment. You know, I'm always so interested how a story catches, you know, national and international attention along these lines. With so many news stories, you know, this particular story really has captured everybody. And I think it's, you know, at least for me, when you look at the story and you look at the pictures and you look at the progression and you look at them and they just look so young and so innocent and so in love, and you sit and you wonder, you know, what could have happened so terribly with people who just seem so young, innocent, in love? What could have happened so terribly to end in this tragic manner? I mean, it really is just it's just, you know, incredibly tragic. And then he disappears, and then there's, you know, a short, you know, flash of water and waves from his Instagram Live, and then now there's reports that he was picked up backpacking on people's cameras, and you know it's a never ending story. But at the end of the day, you have a young, beautiful girl who is just about my daughter's age, who's dead, who was murdered. We have no facts and circumstances yet, but the high suspicion, of course, is something happened between them, and he's involved in that homicide. That's the fact and the suspicion. And then, you know, once the story is over, I think the real tragedy is once the story is over is you're now going to have two families that are completely destroyed, you know, by this. One lost their beautiful daughter. You know, whatever his fate is, his family is completely, you know, destroyed by this for the remainder of their time on Earth. And it's just such a tragedy to wonder, you know, at that young age, with what they seem to have, families that love them and resources and everything else, how does it end in such a tragic way? You know, and I guess at the end of the day, Jay, that's why on Netflix the true crime documentaries are always the most watched stream things, because I think most of us sit and wonder, you know, what was the breaking point? What happened to these people? Where did it all turn? And how can it happen to people that seem so young and innocent? And what's really going on with people? And it's fascinating. It really is. But certainly, you know, my hearts are out to her family and to his. I don't know what happened with him. It seems like he was involved in it. But his family is impacted and really affected by this for the rest of their days as well.
Just so many twists, really. You know, I always remember Joe Petito, the father, in an interview, just when the story broke, you know, as she was missing, and somebody had asked him about the boyfriend, and he didn't want to comment. You know, apparently, a lot of people were wondering about this laundry guy. And in fact, I found it odd also that a lot of Gabby's friends didn't even meet the guy. Gabby didn't want to introduce this guy to anybody. You know, what does that tell you right there? You know, I think there was some hidden dangers with this guy. From all that we have heard, you know, the phone call from the witness that he was slapping her, you know, just very, very hard to comprehend. These two on a journey for 4 months, you know, and she captured the nation, quit a job. She was a nutritionist. She went to be a travel blogger. And a lot of people envied her, you know, going to all these great points around the country and posting it in social media. She became the darling of social media. And I think that's why she kind of catapulted herself as far as being in the mindset of everybody. But so much has gone awry here. And, you know, one of the things I think, and I've spoken to a lot of law guys, officials, cops, our very own Joe Jacklin is on with me on Fridays in the crime report, and they all kind of point to the fact of what happened to this Northport Village Police Department down in Sarasota. What did they do? Could they have done anything? Could you maybe have put a little surveillance on the guy when he came home in that van belonging to Gabby on September 1, Joe? I mean, could they have done anything? Track this guy? Came home alone? Guy's mowing a lawn, according to neighbors, like nothing's wrong. You know, I mean, geez. And you give this guy a 3-day head start, who the heck knows where he is? Listen, I think they'll find him. I think they'll find him alive. And then maybe we get a couple of answers. But, man, I'll tell you, what a tragic end to a beautiful life. Maybe it's a fact. I have a daughter, too, just a couple of years older than Gabby. You know, I don't know. Just gut-wrenching. Gut-wrenching to have. And you know, Long Island girl, too. Went to Bayport Blue Point. Finished up a couple of years ago with this guy. And started on their journey, lived in Florida, started on their journey and everything else. Just tough to really comprehend. Every day is a new day as far as revelations, though, in this case. And they're combing the area today again. But so many twists. The Mall of Utah situation August 12th when they were pulled over and she got very emotional. And, you know, just there were so many signs, you know, so many signs of intervention. And I think that's what bothers a lot of folks. You know, it's easy to play armchair and everything else, but I think the one thing I can't figure out is why surveillance was not put on this guy. He was the lone guy. He was the guy with her. and he comes home, and I get the ridiculous line of constitutional rights. Oh, come on. Please.
Yeah, I don't think it was constitutional rights. Surveillance, I'm very surprised with. You know, a lot of people have asked me, why didn't they execute a search warrant on the house immediately? Why didn't they take the van immediately? The problem they have is at the point he showed up without her, there was no proof that a crime had committed. There was no body. Everybody knew, you know, that something wasn't right. But from a legal perspective, and I understand this, if they had jumped the gun too quickly with a search warrant or any sort of, you know, unconstitutional act towards him, then you run the risk of a conviction down the road being thrown out on appeal because of that. I understand that. But I'm a million percent in favor of you with surveillance, Jay. You know, when I woke up and learned he's disappeared, I'm like, what are you talking about? Was there like a secret trapdoor tunnel under the house that he was able to escape through? I mean, how does he just disappear? Isn't there 24/7 surveillance on the house? So super bizarre. I think that's going to be a question that needs to be answered at some point. But right now, I think the entire focus is trying to find him and get answers to what exactly happened. What exactly happened, you know? And I'll be curious to see what he has to say.
Media outlet camped outside that house on Wabasso Drive in Northport, Florida. Every media outlet. And this guy escapes. This guy escapes. How does that happen? Unbelievable. Joe Campolo off the record. On the record. We surge ahead to Governor Kathy Hochul. Joe, a little switching of the gears again. You got a lot going on right now with this governor, right? You got the extended eviction moratorium until January, the suspension of the open meetings law, new leaders of the Office of Cannabis Management, Cannabis Control Board. Kathy Hochul as well, letting 190-some-odd inmates out of Rikers Island. You know, this is a head-scratcher for me in a lot of ways with this governor. Joe, she has gone hard left in a lot of different areas, including the selection of that lieutenant governor in that of former state senator Brian Benjamin. Defund the police at the very top of his agenda. I can't figure it out. I don't know why politicians, when they are entrenched as being somewhat moderate, they it's almost like a magnet, you know, is kind of the magnet is upon some of these individuals, and they pull them left. They pull them hard left. That's what Hochul has been here. She has gone rogue on all of us. She's gone hard left, Joe, in a lot of areas. Tough to figure out in the last month. Really is. Tough to figure out, in my estimation.
You know, Jay, it reminds me of, you know, there's a movie called The American President where Michael Douglas plays the president. And the greatest line in it, honestly, is he said, you know, I was so busy trying to keep my job that I forgot to do my job. And I really feel like, and we see this, you know, really happen a lot, particularly when moderate, and I'll say moderate Democrats get elected into office, and then they start trying to keep their job rather than doing their job. And I think, you know, we've seen that with the Biden administration. We see that with the Kathy Hochul. You know, she clearly was a moderate pro-business Democrat as lieutenant governor and as the rest of her political career. And now, as governor, we see her being pulled left. Now, that's not just with the Democrats. It's just that, you know, Washington and Albany right now are controlled by Democrats. So we're seeing that happen. It happens with moderate Republicans as well. The right fringe wing pulls them right and basically says, you can't get reelected without us, so you have to beat our drum and our agenda. You know, but what it really takes is political courage. I mean, I feel like Republicans and Democrats, you know, they've gotten so brainwashed that they can't win unless they pander to whatever extreme part of their party is there. They can't win without that. And it's just false. Just take a look at Bill Clinton. I mean, Bill Clinton was able to win re-election as a moderate Democrat by getting support of Republicans and Democrats and not having to pander to the fringe of either party. That's called political courage. You know, you're able to just say, this is my agenda. This is what the vast majority of Americans want, and I'm going to do it. And if you don't like it, I understand that you're going to work against me. I understand you're going to put up a third-party candidate. I understand you're going to primary. I'm still going to do what I think is right at this point and move forward and let the chips fall where they are. And really, Bill Clinton was an incredible example of someone who was able to do that really, really well. He attracted tons of moderate Republicans because he moderate during his term. And we just don't see that in politics at all. The fringe, and it, what it's done is it's emboldened. It's really emboldened the fringes on both sides to feel like they have much more power than they really do. You know, every single person I talk to, everyone that I speak to, basically says, why can't we just be moderate? Why can't we just, you know, get this great coalition of Americans that all sort of see things the same way and move this country forward? Who cares if it's a Democrat? Who cares if it's a Republican? I say, because people don't vote. People just don't vote, or they vote blindly. That's the reason why we can't get it moving in the right direction, you know. And it's somebody like Ronald Reagan, a great unifier who was able to win in landslide elections back to back, because he, even though he, you know, was a staunch conservative, he did not pander to the fringes, and that's exactly where I think this country needs to get back to. And what I was hoping, honestly, that Joe Biden was going to be able to do, and what I was hoping, honestly, that Kathy Hochul was going to be able to do, right? But let's see how it plays out. I mean, we have to get back to center in this country if we're ever going to start to unify again. If we keep playing ping pong, going from one fringe to the other fringe, there's never going to be. And it's the center that holds this country together. It's the center that holds the economy together. It's the center that holds our Constitution together. And all we're doing is taking a ping pong ball and hanging it over the heads of the center, back and forth to the fringes, and ripping us further and further apart.
A common sense, right, Joe? Because you're right, it's pandering. And that's what Kathy Hochul has done with the selection of a Brian Benjamin, okay? That's what she has done, this defund the police movement, okay? This was the top of the charts for Brian Benjamin. This is what he advocated for. She is looking ahead to 2022, okay? She's not thinking about the people of the state right now. She's thinking about re-election come next year, all right? She's going to be battling Lee Zeldin for the right to take over the chamber. And quite frankly, she is pandering to that left. Listen, if she wants to make a stand, she would have done it already. She hasn't. She kept on that deer in the headlights one, Howard Zucker, the health commissioner. Should have fired him immediately for his role in the deadly nursing home disaster and cover-up, by the way. You know, the preferential COVID testing for the administration's family and friends at private residences. This is all, I could list all the faux pas of Zucker on why he should have gotten the pink slip. Guess what? He's still there. Should have been. You want to make a stand, Governor Hochul? How about repeal the bail deal? All right. How about we keep the bad guys behind bars? How about allowing judges to be what they're there for, to have the power to make decisions? How about keeping qualified immunity to protect our police officers from legal harassment for just doing their jobs? How about just that? I mean, I could go into a plethora of things. I don't see any of it yet from Kathy Hochul. I happen to like Kathy Hochul. Very pleasant woman. She's been on this program countless times. Not recently, though. I wonder why. But, you know, the thing is, I'm not liking what I'm seeing in the last 5 weeks. It's a terrible start to her regime here. Terrible start. I don't know if she could turn around. I don't know. She'll have to do an about face, in my estimation. Jury's still out. Not going to condemn it yet. But, Joe, 35 days, I haven't seen anything that I liked. Nothing. So we'll see what happens. You know, she's the vaccine, the sites, and everything else. I want to see her do something with this state. This state right now is in dire straits. Bring spending under control, please. Lower the backbreaking tax burden and the insane cost of living, strangling hard working New York families, Kathy Hochul, please. It's pushed many to the breaking point, forcing them to flee. They've gone elsewhere. Enough is enough. Figure it out. Quick. Please. Figure it out. So let's see what happens there. That's my stance as far as Kathy Hochul is concerned. Joe, final topic here. At time, let's get to the Sussman situation and the Clintons and everything else. You know, it is what it is, but, you know, we've got some news here regarding that. And, you know, quite frankly, this is going to become a very, very big story as we get through this. There's a lot going on here, but give the folks an idea as far as what's happening here with Mike Sussman.
Yeah, I mean, look, Jay, especially, I'll tell you, if the Republicans flip the House in 2022 and retake the Senate in 2022, this is going to be a huge issue and a huge story. I mean, the latest indictment of an attorney who was working for the Clinton campaign back in 2016, and, you know, people do not understand, I don't think, the gravity of this yet, but when you look at what this means, it's really what got us into the mess we're in today, for the most part, right? Because, you know, we like to joke around. The media loves to joke around about people who say that, you know, the election was rigged and then Biden stole the election, and everybody sort of shakes their head and laughs about it. But if you roll the tapes back 4 years, the biggest news story and the thing that divided this country bigger than Donald Trump was the media giving life to this notion that Trump and his campaign conspired with the Russians to steal the election. It was such a big issue that a special independent counsel had to be appointed to look into it, and it really began what we're calling the undermining of the American presidency. Forget about Donald Trump for a minute. Just forget about him, right? The story came out that a presidential campaign conspired with a foreign country to win the election, and Robert Mueller came back and said, it's false. Just never happened. Okay, fine. How did that all start? And that's what this indictment is all about, is the man who lit the fuse on that entire ugly, disgusting period of history in our country was an attorney who lied to the FBI, leaked them a story about the Trump campaign being tied to Russian banks, which was false. There was no tie there, but leaked it to the FBI under the theory, according to the indictment, under the theory that the Clinton campaign was then going to be able to leak a story saying the FBI is investigating the Trump campaign for secret ties to a Russian bank. When this lawyer knew that that was false, and then lied to the FBI when they asked him if he was working for any campaign or any individual, and he said no. He was basically doing it as a Good Samaritan whistleblower. Okay, and that, my friend, is how this whole fuse got lit on this whole frenzy of the Trump campaign was conspiring with Russia, which was a total lie. And he lied to the FBI about it, and now he's indicted. And now we're going to have to find out exactly what happened. And if you look at the disgusting way this country has really turned on its head because that of the start of that issue, he should pay dearly. Now, let's look at the other side of the coin, because the other side of the coin is, you know, the New York Times today, they're reporting how, you know, the attorney who is representing the Trump campaign in their lawsuit saying that there was fake votes and the elections were rigged and all this other stuff, apparently, and according to the New York Times article, apparently that lawyer knew those claims were false when they were filing claims in with the courts, which is equally as despicable and as disgusting. You know, lawyers are supposed to be protectors and defenders of the Constitution, And here we find what the problem is when you start undermining our institutions and lying. And I think it's going to be a really big story. I think it's really a tragedy. It's unbelievable that that's, you know, where we are today. All started because of the Russia hoax. And we, you know, we weren't laughing about it then. As a country, they kind of chuckle about it now when people say the election was stolen. But back then, you know, it was a huge story. And this is the guy who lit the fuse. So I'm fascinated to see how this is all going to play out.
You know, I'm not a big fan of Senator Ron Johnson. He did a good job as far as that interrogation of Chris Wray, FBI Director, Joe. And I'll tell you, you know, Johnson went on to say, you know, it was the same dynamic. You remember the, in terms of the, remember the Steele dossier? Remember that old deal that contained, you know, the Russian disinformation about the former president and really became basis for the, you know, Operation Crossfire. When you think about it, and I'll tell you, he pressed Ray pretty good here. What I want to know is, who else was involved here? You know, we know the names. That big mouth Andrew McCabe, is he involved? I want to know. What about Lisa Page? What about that other guy, Strzok? I want to know. I mean, did they have knowledge about Sussman's ties to Clinton here? I want to know. And I don't want to hear, you know, Ray gives you the corporate line on the matter because it's an ongoing criminal investigation, blah, 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 blah. I want to know the involvement here of others. And that, to me, is key as well. Very, very key. But quite frankly, this Sussman guy is dirt. And, you know, there's more to come out of this. I think, as I agree with you, this is a massive story that's unfolding right now. So we'll keep an eye on this. Got to keep an eye on the clock, Joe. Can you believe it's almost time to say goodbye? What do we have going on within the great firm, my friend? Give me something. What do we got going on?
Jay, I've got to tell you, we are super, super busy. We're still on a hiring phase. You know, if people go to our website, cmmllp.com, and look at our postings, you know, we want to get people back to work. We want to get everybody back to work and working hard. You know, it's shifted. I'll tell you what's interesting, Jay, is the economy has definitely shifted. You know, we're looking for different talent now than we had in the past. It's always very challenging, but I'd encourage anybody, to look at our careers page and see what we're looking for at this point, because we're certainly on a hiring, and we're excited to be hiring. You know, I haven't been this busy in a super long time, and it feels really good to be back into the groove that we're in, my friend. I'll tell you that.
Nobody gets it done better than you. So, you know, doesn't surprise me. You got everything going. The great Joe Campolo, folks. Campolo Middleton and McCormick, one of the great firms in America. In fact, Forbes recognizes them as being just that, you know. I mean, think about how many firms Forbes endorses that way. Well, guess what? CMM was one of them. Three locations, you know, about Riverhead, Ronkonkoma, and, of course, let's not forget Westbury. CMMLP.com, great website, and learn more about it. And, of course, the number at 631-738-9100. Great people work at this phenomenal firm. And you know why they don't leave? Because it's such a great place to work. I'm telling you. It's true. It really is. Joseph, a pleasure, and I look forward to having another round with you in a couple of weeks, and maybe even a round on the links one day, you and I. What do you think?
Yep, love that. Love it, Jay, and love nothing more.